my pleasure to welcome you to another one of our Inquiring Minds lecture series, which is made possible through the sponsorship of the Washington Commission for the Humanities and ultimately by the National Endowment for the Humanities. And it's a wonderful program, and if you belong to a community in your own hometown, I would urge you to look into it. It's a speakers bureau that costs the organization nothing, and is an effort to promote the humanities in the state of Washington. So it's a wonderful opportunity for us. And if after the lecture, if you're interested in how you might become involved in supporting humanities, we have some brochures up here called Leap Into Another World, because as you probably know, public support for the humanities is in a bit of a crisis right now. The commission also asked that we evaluate this talk. That's part of their ongoing effort to improve their speakers year after year. And so I'm going to pass around these audience evaluation forms and would ask if you please take one if you'd like to. And I also have some pencils up here if you don't have something to write. So pass these around. And when we're done tonight, you can just simply set those up on the hearth here, and I'll bring some up to the balcony crowd. Could you pass this box around? Okay, so the preliminaries are out of the way. And David, I think we can roll the tape now. It is my pleasure to introduce once more Dr. Claudia Conker, who combines her work as a social worker, a psychotherapist, with her expertise as a cultural anthropologist to address issues of socialization, violence, and cultural values in American society. And if you were with us on Wednesday evening, you were enjoying, as I did, a wonderful lecture on the Hutterite community, and we also had the great privilege of having four community members with us that evening to talk about their community values. And this evening, Dr. Conker is going to revisit the Hutterite communities in a lecture entitled Kinship and the American Family, Traditional Wisdom in an Era of Contemporary Uncertainty. So please welcome Dr. Claudia Conker.
Good evening, fellow Holden villagers. If you can't hear me, I can speak up, and I can slow down. On Wednesday night when I talked, I was given a real short period of time. Tonight, I can run on or I can sort of shorten things up, but tonight I'm going to be talking about kinship and family in America, and this is a subject that for me is a very personally meaningful subject, as it is, I'm sure, for those of you who've chosen to attend. And I will be doing three things tonight. First, I'll be making formal remarks about kinship and my view of some of the problems we have with that here in America today. I'll show you slides of Hutterite life to show you an example of alternate kinship models of many that exist in the United States today. And then third, I'll take questions. So tonight I'm speaking to you from a variety of perspectives. I'm talking to you as a cultural anthropologist, an academic. I'm speaking from over 20 years as a social worker dealing with children, families, and adults. I'm also speaking as a concerned parent of an adult child. I'm speaking as an American citizen and as a grateful participant in some wonderful kinship groups. I think that we can all agree in America today that we live in an era of rapid cultural change. And we live in an era of uncertainty about the future. Our most basic social relationships, male-female, parent-child, couple, marital, and familial, all which were once taken for granted, are now either being redefined, debated, or critically reevaluated. For example, as these clippings culled from my local newspaper will illustrate, many people are concerned about the American family, which is our primary institution for socializing our future citizens. And what I do is keep files, of course, of the areas of research I'm interested in. Here's one from 1990, this is now 95. Tough growing up in America. We're worse than some third world countries in the way we raise our children. Suicide rates, teenage pregnancy, divorce, all kinds of morality. Children, young men in the United States are 5 times likely, more likely to be murdered than any other developing country in the world. Could go on. Here's this clipping from 1991. Family dysfunction creates generations of rage and pain. Here's one from 1994. Family drug problems spur school violence, study says. And Emmett Watson, one of the local pundits in Seattle, all these killings blame our ailing families, says crime writer. Marion Wright Edelman, one of the founders of the Children's Defense Fund, says black leader accuses adults of being afraid of their children. So this is some of the material, and if you read the newspaper or hear the news, that is basically available on a daily basis to talk about the problems that we're having with family life. And as much as I applaud this public critique and discussion, I'm really concerned that all the well-meaning words and projects that are currently being developed to, quote, save our children or, quote, strengthen our families will really have very little systematic impact until we as a nation publicly acknowledge that we in America currently lack shared socialization standards. That is, cultural norms, beliefs, and values, which all American communities and families can understand, appreciate, and support. Today, I believe many American children are in crisis because they are growing up in a culture which lacks fair, consistent, and clear rules for social conduct and interpersonal responsibility. How are our children supposed to know right from wrong? Or how are American parents supposed to know right from wrong when many contemporary mental health professionals, for example, can't even agree on whether something as simple as spanking should be considered child abuse, is pathological, or should be a part of normative parenting? So my many years of personal and professional experience lead me to conclude it's time to move beyond professional arguments and academic debates. It's time for some common sense. If we are really serious about addressing public concerns about family values and the alleged breakdown of the contemporary family, rather than bewailing what is broken or arguing about what to do, I think that we first must understand the universal function of kinship in human relations if we're going to understand why we're having the problems we are. So kinship, which is people's awareness of their biological, marital, or emotional bonds with other human beings, is the fundamental basis for human social organization. And across cultures, universally in human life, kinship groups universally provide for child socialization, the orderly transmission of property, and they endow a person with social position both between generations and in the larger culture. So in sum, the kin group defines a universe of others upon whom an individual can depend in a variety of ways. So viewed from an anthropological perspective, although accepted family socialization structures may vary dramatically across cultures, kinship is universally recognized as a basic organizing principle of culture. So to study the field of kinship, then, is also to study the focal field of moral experience. This is because our concept of humanity is powerfully influenced by our beliefs and values about the role and function of kinship in the context of culture. So cultural beliefs about family relations are actually abstractions. They're social categories through which the relationship between our families and the rest of society and culture is articulated. Think about it. Children depend on their parents, and parents ideally think of themselves as socializing their children to become responsible citizens for the next generation. Similarly, society is ideally viewed as providing for the parents of its children. That's what we pay our taxes for. Particularly, society is responsible for dealing with the special needs of families that due to poverty, illness, or other social misfortunes. Yet, as opposed to many other cultures in America, historically and to date, the textbook family has been construed to consist of a mother, wife, sometimes, sometimes not, and a father, husband, sometimes not, living independently from other kin and assuming primary moral, social, economic, and legal responsibility for their minor children. This ideal normative family doesn't include involved or actively participating grandparents or other adult siblings. It's also assumed in America that once young adults graduate from high school, they'll live with their parents only temporarily while emancipating to construct their own lives. And our belief and value system in America is somebody that doesn't emancipate in adulthood is pathological and maybe even in need of some mental health counseling. However, today, this mythical image has been shattered. Not only has the definition of the American family expanded to recognize single parent, foster parent, adoptive parent, and grandparent families, we now acknowledge same-sex couples as parents and blended families born of divorce. Also, an increasing number of adult children, often with their own offspring, are now returning to their natal homes and their parents' homes, often for financial reasons. So I think it's really time to acknowledge that the American family has always existed in a wide variety of cultural forms. African-American families include mother-centered families supported by a multi-generation network of both fictive and blood kin. Asian-American families incorporate physically absent but psychologically present relatives still living in foreign lands. And polygamous families, that is, families with one man and several wives, continue to thrive in protected areas of the Mountain West. And whether one agrees or disagrees with these kinship constellations, the fact is they do exist and they serve the same universal functions which most of us associate with our American and modern Western European nuclear family model. However, this model is relatively recent and only slowly emerged during the last 200 years with the advent of the Industrial Revolution. Traditionally, in Europe and in most of the non-industrialized world today, the kinship unit was and remains based on the extended family model. This model, which has stood the test of time around the world, also continues to exist in some cultural groups in America. And I think that we have much to learn from the traditional socialization wisdom of such groups. And with this in mind, I want to introduce you to a little-known society of people who, over 450 years ago, developed a successful and productive recipe for cooperative living, loving, working, and surviving together as a group. For the last 120 years, American families have included those of the Hutterites, a unique group of ethnic Germanic Protestant believers who, along with their pacifistic spiritual kin, the Amish and the Mennonites, emerged during the Reformation, at the same time Martin Luther was dissenting with the Catholic Church. The Hutterites, the Amish, and the Mennonites were characterized as Anabaptists and protesting the excesses of the Catholic Church in 16th century Europe. And all three groups immigrated to America eventually to escape religious persecution. So ethnic Hutterites who arrive in America in 1874 are today an ever-expanding American subculture, now over 35,000 strong. And they live and work in small agricultural rural communities called colonies, which generally contain between 40 and 120 adults and children. These colonies are located in the United States from Washington State to Minnesota, so some of you here may know of Hutterites from back there or across the states, and in Canada they exist in provinces from British Columbia to Manitoba. And Hutterites are a tradition-based cultural group who share all their worldly goods. And they raise their children in the context of a spiritual community of brothers and sisters in faith, if not blood. And from their earliest history, Hutterites have recognized that formally organized and vigilantly observed communal, that is, community, child socialization and education practices are critical to their survival. So as opposed to the experience of many children in the larger North American culture, no Hutterite child ever misses participating in a loving and secure extended family that is, in fact, a three-generation kinship and community system. And for those of you who are lucky enough to meet the Hutterites that were here on Wednesday, you saw three generations of one of the Hutterite kinship systems, and you'll see some of their pictures in the slides. Nor are Hutterite children ever deprived of a nuclear family with a mother and father, or father surrogates, present and involved in every aspect of their life, their moral, religious, educational, and social development in the community. Also, no Hutterite child ever experiences the developmental disruption, pain, and loss of divorce. From birth, Hutterite children experience a secure, uniform, and nurturing cultural environment. Hutterite society supports and nurtures each newborn infant and their mother, as you will see in the slides, during an extended time period, which the entire social structure formally acknowledges as a critical bonding time between the mother and child. And except when adults are working, it is rare to see small children not being held or played with. In fact, it's rare to see a child under two not being held in someone's lap, except when the child wants out of a lap. In fact, one category of children in Hutterite culture is called lap children, and that's a designated age for which they start applying a discipline. Yet by age three, most Hutterite children are already being formally taught to view other people as important as themselves. Hutterites developed the formal concept of kindergarten 300 years before the Germans began to use the word commonly. Also, by age six, Hutterite boys and girls are beginning to contribute to their community. Hutterite children early in life become responsible and nurturing caretakers for younger children when their parents are busy. And at each stage in community life, and in each stage in development, in school and in social relations, children learn that the needs of the group precede their own because they recognize, as does everyone in the community, that if the group fails, so does every individual. So in sum, what Hutterite children learn is a community spirit worldview, a we mentality rather than the me mentality that we teach and reinforce in the larger American cultural frame. And it's not only the formal education structure which molds young Hutterites' worldview. They're protected from graphic depictions of violence, aggression, and sexually provocative materials. Television, movies, and video games are simply not part of the normative development of Hutterite youth. Also, unlike the beliefs about athletic activities in the larger culture, Hutterites do not view organized, aggressive, and individual competitive play as being a useful part of a child's educational or developmental experience. However, group sports are viewed as being an acceptable diversion and a pleasurable activity when one's work is done. Also, unlike their outside adolescent counterparts, and Hutterites call themselves insiders and us outsiders, just for your information, they do perceive themselves as being in a separate place from us. Adolescents view work, recreation, and pleasure frequently is experienced and viewed as being one and the same activity for them. And as you will see in the slides, you'll see why. By age 15, when Hutterite youth join adult society, each has been provided with consistent day-to-day examples of how to become successful Hutterite men and women. All Hutterite youths and young adults are quietly praised and emotionally rewarded for their economic and their personal contribution to community life. And as opposed to the ever-increasing United States emphasis on legal punishment and stigmatization of individuals who deviate from our often unclear and contradictory norms, when a Hutterite, whether they're an adult or a child, transgress community rules. They're punished not because they're a bad individual, but because they must suffer the consequences of their willful wrong behavior. Suffering, misbehavior, and human affliction are understood by Hutterites to be tests by God, not only for the afflicted individual, but for those around them. And Hutterites will be the first to tell you they're not perfect because they're always experiencing temptation and sins and failures of character, which the community sees itself as responsible for supporting and changing. Thus, Hutterites' treatment of kin, friends, and colony members, once they get over the shock of whatever misconduct has taken place, is generally characterized by tenderness, compassion, kindness, patience, and most important, forgiveness. When a wrongdoer has been punished, it is finished for the community and the individual. That person is never spoken to again about the problem that they had. Once they have, there's been public acknowledgement of their misconduct and they've accepted responsibility. So no Hutterite, while in community, young or old, is ever left unprotected or deprived of adequate nutrition, housing, clothing, medical care, emotional, spiritual, and social support. Nor, except in rare and time-limited circumstances, is Hutterite society one in which some members of a community are able to financially prosper and attain a material lifestyle which is not made available to their kin, their neighbors, and their co-workers. So what I'd like to do now is actually show you slides of Hutterite life and take you through the sequence of material that visually that I have just presented to you and give you some commentary about how the socialization process operates. And then after I conclude, I'll be glad to take questions. And for any of you who are here on Wednesday, you may have questions that you didn't ask the Hutterites or you may have been too polite to ask. And I would be very happy to answer any kinds of questions that you have. And for those of you who've seen the slides once, bear with me. You may hear some repetitive material, but I didn't bring a second set because I wasn't sure I was going to be speaking twice. To start our slideshow, we're actually going to start with the Hutterites, Amish kin in the East. The Amish came to America over 200 years ago, and the Amish, the Mennonites, and the Hutterites, as Anabaptists, all share the same bedrock Christian values, and that is adult profession of faith and baptism as an adult, not as an infant. And that is why they were persecuted by the Catholic Church, was that this was a break. This was essentially a break from the Church's practices in the 16th century. And they believe in hard work for the common good, and they also believe in modesty and plain living and essentially non-materialistic lifestyle. And the Amish differ from the Hutterites in that the Amish do not use technology. And though an Amish person and a Hutterite man or woman may look alike in that they wear traditional clothing that is essentially like a 16th century dress, or suspenders and black clothing for men, obviously they're very different technologically. The Amish control their culture, the pace of their cultural life, by maintaining a pace of life that we would consider quaint. They don't use technology, or they use it only as they see it absolutely necessary. And however, in opposition to the Amish, Hutterite colonies, and this is an aerial view of a Hutterite colony in eastern Washington, Hutterite colonies do in fact use any high technology that they believe will benefit their material lifestyle and for their spiritual survival of the group. And all Hutterite colonies, whether you're in Washington State, Montana, back in North or South Dakota, will be laid out in the same axis and according to the same plan. And Hutterites believe that they are in the world, but not of the world. So they separate themselves from us so that they're not contaminated by us. They believe that God's plan for them is to be living examples of Christ's teachings. And so even if you're in a country area like Moses Lake, Washington, it's unlikely that you'll come upon a Hutterite colony unless you know where they are, because they're always located in a rural area, at least a mile and a half down a gravel road from the nearest paved road. So it's not like the Amish, where they're in a tourist country now, where people will literally be peeking in their windows and photographing them while they're holding church services, you would find it very uncomfortable to come into a Hutterite colony without their permission, because they'll speak German, and you won't find that you'll have anybody speaking to you if they don't want you there. They essentially will pretend they don't see you until you decide to go away. So it's one way that they will deal with outsiders. And coming into a colony, what you'll see is that the Hutterites live in row houses, very much like Northwest Native American or traditional people all around the world. Kin groups live together. So in each of these long houses, there's actually three apartments, and each apartment has a basement with bedrooms, a sitting room, and a small, what would be a kitchenette for snacks in each of the units. And in the center of a colony, what you will see is the kitchen. The kitchen is always the heart of the colony, because as here in Holden, which is an intentional community which exists year-round, Hutterites eat communally. It's one of the times they come together to break bread and share their spiritual life and their life together. And in the background, behind the row of houses to the right, you see which is the church and the school. And again, you can see, compared to the Amish, what kind of technology the Hutterites use in terms of their economics and their agriculture. They use the biggest and the best, and what they don't buy, they innovate and invent often. Hutterites are a gerontocratic society in that they respect the wisdom of their elders, and when a Hutterite colony fissions and splits, which is about every 20 years, which provides for young men and young women chances for leadership positions, they always take a set of grandparents with them. When a colony divides, they always take the grandparents, because they're seen as the repository of wisdom. Also for grandparents, these pictures aren't staying too good. For grandparents, their older years are golden years, because they're always surrounded with a network of kin, and their relatives will come, particularly daughters, sisters, grandchildren will come on a monthly basis and rotate to care for them. So they're never left alone, and they always have people providing for their needs until they pass on to their heavenly reward. Hutterites, being Germanic, believe in conservation, and they either conserve or they will recycle. And what you see here is some of their old farm machinery, which has been recycled into mailboxes. And you can see they've got it all painted up, and they've got the rocks cleaned up, and everything in a Hutterite colony is very neat and orderly. Now this is looking at the school, which is also the church. And you can see here's the laundry hanging on the line, and actually that's another Hutterite invention. I think that swinging laundry thing was a horse trainer that they had taken and converted for their laundry. And this is a interior of a Hutterite church. And this is used for school and classrooms, and you can see how plain it is. Hutterites, like the Amish and the traditional Mennonites, are plain people. And this they have consciously designed in opposition to what they were persecuted and killed by the thousands for in the 16th century. This is a picture of the Wittenberg Church, very near where Martin Luther preached as a Catholic priest. And you can see the opulence, and they felt that the spirit is in the community, not in the structure. So their lives are very plain in opposition to what they protested against. And every Hutterite colony, the preacher is one of the senior men in the colony and is elected for life. And this is the first family that took me into their homes and introduced me to Hutterite life. And this is the preacher in a colony, accompanied by his wife, who some of you may have met, who is here this afternoon. They were here earlier this week. And Hutterite women, like many women in traditional religious groups, from Muslims to Hasidic Jews, cover their head, both to show respect for their faith and God, but also to show submission to their husbands. Hutterites are kinship linked. So all of my relationships with Hutterites essentially evolved from my relationship with the first two Hutterites you saw, because the woman, this is her brother, and the people I brought with me was another brother of this man and his sister and his wife and their granddaughter. And this was the head cook, which is also an important elected position for women in the colony. And this is the beginning of life. When a baby is born in Hutterite life, a grandparent, a mother, a sister, or a very close kin will come to care for the new mother, not the offspring so much as the new mother and her offspring, for a period of up to 8 weeks, during which the mother does nothing but bond with her baby. All food is brought to her. In fact, a woman is assigned to cook her special food to get her strength back. And all she does for 8 weeks is to come to see her baby and visit with her. Her first public act in moving back into community life will be to attend church, and then for another 3 months she'll only wash dishes in the community kitchen. So all of the Hutterite colonies across America recognize that the bond between a mother and child is critical to the child's future survival and for the survival of the colony. And what this grandmother's doing is a very interesting thing. Hutterites don't believe in praising a child or making too much of a child. And though they'll tell you they're not suspicious, this binding, which looks like a Byzantine Christ binding, is actually the red protects it from the evil eye. And what this grandma knows is this is her first grandson, and he's a very handsome little guy, and she's making sure nobody compliments him too much so he gets sick. But when I asked her, what was this about? She said, just keep the blanket on, Claudia. And here's the dad with his new little son. And again, rarely will you ever see a very small child out of someone's arms. In fact, grandmothers or mothers of new mothers are very important to socializing their daughters and how to care for children. And in this case, I was there when the baby was just brand new and just out of the hospital. And what grandma would do is when a relative or friend held the baby too long, she'd stand over and pat her foot to let them know it was time to give that baby back. I mean, so she was teaching right away how you treat a new baby. And this is another grandmother with her first grandson. And you can see how long I've been stuttering Hutterites by my hair. It's been a long time I've been going to visit him. And this little guy, he's got his suspenders on already. There's really no gender dysphoria or confusion about who you are, whether you're male or female, because mothers even make newborn infants little outfits that have suspenders if they're a boy, or the little girl's outfits will reflect what their future roles will be in female society. And here's a dad with his little daughter. And in the larger society, we would think leaving a child of this age, of toddler age, home alone, or home alone without their mother for a period of maybe a month, would be deprivation and psychologically damaging. However, since the community is the source of socialization in Hutterite life, that is not a problem. And what you find is children learn that they can love anyone and that everyone provides nurturance as well as discipline. So this little girl doesn't miss her mother because she's surrounded by loving kin and relatives who have always been with her and who can always replace what her mother isn't there to provide. And here you can get a sense of the closeness in Hutterite families. Little boys and girls, they're always touching, they're physically very close. And one's kinship bonds, your family bonds, will remain primary and the closest bonds you will ever have in life. And in Hutterite society, it's very rationally designed to provide children with an opportunity to be successful. Usually in a year, every year or two, there's a successful transition in clothing or in patterns around the community of opportunities to do things that show them that they're moving towards successful adult socialization. And in little girls, when they're very young, their mother braids their hair, particularly around their face, and they wear a cap. But as they get older, they begin to start taking care of their own hair, and as you can see with the older girl, she's beginning to roll her hair under in this traditional 16th century hairstyle with a bun in the back and rolled with a braid, and then she'll move to the shawl. So at each step, they know that they're beginning to move into the roles that they are expected to play and look forward to playing an adult life. And as I mentioned earlier, in Hutterite life, very young children are also caretakers. And around the world in traditional societies, children as young as 6 and 7 can be left alone with children and infants for up to 2 or 3 hours without people having any concern about the child not being responsible. And in Hutterite society, children between 7 and 15 are primary caretakers when the parents may be butchering for a whole colony or putting up preserves, or they may be plucking feathers from a geese. All of these things, during these times, children will be with children. However, if a child should cry, a grandparent or someone will appear and put a stop to it immediately. So there is supervision, but it's very indirect and only brought out when necessary. And here again is an example of a girl. And this is not just girls. Boys do it too. Unfortunately, I don't have the pictures of the boys doing it, but they'll have wagons full of babies and they'll be hauling people around and enjoying their activities with them in the afternoons. And Hutterite society is one which the the scriptural and the spiritual supersedes the corporal. And because Hutterite children attend what they call English school, which is our public school, they surround that with German school. So the German school teacher and his wife are two very critical socialization agents in Hutterite society, and they are elected to their positions. And the German school teacher sees the children a half hour before the public school or English school and afterwards in the afternoon. And this is where they learn high and low German. They learn their scriptures. They learn the Hutterite way. And you can see how formally organized this is. And here the children are writing in German on the board, or writing on the board. And the Hutterite elder, the German school teacher, if you look at his elbow on the right, you'll see a stick. Hutterites use corporal punishment. But as opposed to the issue of is corporal punishment or spanking child abuse or not child abuse, Hutterites believe in the biblical injunction, spare the rod and spoil the child. However, there's very clear shared norms for when to apply discipline. And in the community, once a child is over 5 years old and in school, the German school teacher is responsible for applying discipline unless it's an individual family transgression. And even then, most of the time, the father takes the child out of the house in front of the community to spank them. So it's a public humiliation, and it's an acknowledgement that this child has transgressed, and the whole community should be aware of it. And then when it's over, it's over. So there's very little deviation in terms of how much is too much, and it's very easy for anybody in the community to see if anybody is mistreating a child. So child abuse, as we know it, does not exist in Hutterite colonies. And this is in contrast to the formal German education. This is one of the English schools. And Hutterites do not have their own state-certified teachers. They hire outside teachers who are state-certified. And each colony is its own self-conscious entity. And so what they do is, it's between colony members and the teachers what kind of school they want. So there's Hutterite schools which actually have computers, VCRs, electronic typewriters, and have music and have art, as you can see in this very informal classroom. And Hutterites, again, are always together. They dislike isolation. For them, it's punishment. However, in Washington State, there are five colonies. And as I said, each colony sort of competes with each other in terms of ideology and how they express their Hutterite faith. And in this colony near Spokane, Washington, the oldest in the state, they're still teaching the three R's: reading, writing, and arithmetic. No music, no dance, no art, no VCRs, no anything other than the three R's. And this is what they want. And the children in this colony leave school, which they traditionally did at 15, to move in the apprentice program. Other schools have their children get high school diplomas, while others have GEDs. Hutterites gave up higher education to survive in America because when they first came and sent their young men and women out to get a higher education, because we're individualistic and we teach individual competition and materialism, what would happen is after 4 years of college, they would come back and become deviant members of the community, and they would either disrupt the community or they would be unhappy and take their wives and families or their children and their husbands away. So Hutterites, though they were the most educated in Europe in the 16th century, have sacrificed higher education for their spiritual and physical survival. This is, again, an example of children. And Hutterite children, actually, until they become Betelut with the people, are under the supervision of the German school mother and father all day long, from morning after breakfast to the evening when they go back into their family life. They have their own dining room, and little boys eat in the same age-graded order that they'll eat in the adult dining room. And girls eat in the same age-graded order from youngest to oldest that they will eat when they go to the adult dining room. The little girl without the shawl is the teacher's child and eating with the children. And in the background, you'll see the sinks. So there's someone supervising and teaching the children what they will be doing when they move into adult society. So it's not left to individual families. It's a community standard. And this dining room replicates the adult dining room. And the sinks, the women are surrounding the sinks. And you can see how many women there are in here. And they're able to work together because they're socialized together. And they'll prepare meals for usually 60 to 100 three times a day, and women work in teams of two. And which is interesting is it'll be sisters working together or a mother and daughter, and they will work for 2 weeks cooking meals for all of the family community members, but then they may have 6 months off. So compare that to the mothers and responsibility for their families often today and with all the other things they have to do. And here are men coming in for lunch. And like Holden, there's a bell. And all the important events in the community, there's a bell that rings. And when the bell rings at other times than meals, it means every available hand in the community should come to the kitchen to help. And that's what happens. Unless you're old or taking care of an infant, you come and help. Because sometimes I've seen Hutterite men and women basically dress and prepare 500 chickens in 4 hours. I mean, they can just, it's amazing when they work together what they can do. This is in the dining room. Again, this is the men's table, just as you saw in the children's dining room, age graded up to the head man, and actually the brother of the head man, who's actually the head elder in that community. This is the farm boss, sits at the head and always gives the prayers before and after meals. This is looking at the women's table, and men and women eat separately across the dining room from each other, and age graded again from the youngest to the oldest. And it's always cute when a young woman becomes Beedaloo with the people. You can always tell, if you know Hutterite culture, that there's a new girl in the adult dining room, because the men tease her. And the way they tease her is, the older women know when men need things like bread on the table, but what'll happen is when a new girl comes in, they wait to watch when they sit down, they gobble up their food, and then they tinkle the glasses with their forks to embarrass her, to make her get up to do something for them. And essentially it's a way of just letting her know that she's important and that she's there. It's a way to sort of tease her, and then everybody knows that she's there. Because otherwise this doesn't happen. Most of the time they know exactly who needs to eat what. And then looking at their economic activities, Hutterite life is economically interdependent. Since it's one for all and all for one, everybody works together for the common good. When they do carpentry, men build, women do the sanding, painting, and finishing. When they do agriculture, women are involved in the business aspects of it, and they know the crops, while the men do the physical aspects often. This is looking at one of their mechanic shops, and even though they don't have higher education, what they do is they hire the expertise when they buy new tools, and then they learn to use them, and then they innovate. And this is looking in one of the men's barns, and they have the biggest and best equipment, I guarantee you. And they have their own repair trucks, so during harvest season they can go out and repair their own things. When young men and women are between 15 and 20 years old, they're in formal apprentice programs where they learn all the roles that they will be playing in adult life. And they'll work with men and women to learn those roles. Hutterites, as I mentioned before, also invent. And even though they believe in modesty and not in competing or self-aggrandizement, this is one of their inventions. And you can see they've given it a name, the Bigger Digger. And you say, bigger than what? Well, bigger than any digger that was ever invented before. They can dig 4 rows of potatoes while all the other diggers could only do 2. But what will happen is, because they're not supposed to compete with outsiders for economic prowess, often outsiders will see their inventions. The agricultural people come around to see what the Hutterites were up to, and what they'll do is steal the idea and patent it and sell it, which really upsets the Hutterites. They really don't like that. Hutterites use humor to sublimate aggression. You know, like all of us, community life, and those of you who are here in Holden all year long know that community life can be difficult, and that people can't always cooperate, and there are times when people are both aggressive, and there are times when there's going to be conflict. So what they do is usually communicate through humor. So there will be lots of joking and lots of humor in a Hutterite colony. And in Hutterites, as I mentioned before, build everything. They try to be as self-sufficient as possible. And here you have this is actually an old Hutterite carpentry shop now. The new one is totally computerized. It's just unbelievable. This one before, I thought it was modern because it vented the dust out. Now you don't even see the dust. I mean, it's just amazing. And this Hutterite is building a coffin. And this is an example of some of their craftsmanship. But the reason I include this coffin is because in the midst of life there is death. And in Hutterite life, death isn't feared. It's looked forward to. Because if you've lived a life of sacrifice in community, you know you're going to your heavenly reward. And what actually happened, the reason I got this picture, was there was a wedding, and one of the preachers that came from another colony to celebrate the wedding died at the wedding. So instead of being upset, they built him a beautiful coffin. They had a little service for him and sent him home because other than marriages, funerals are the only time that all work stops in a community. And people will come from hundreds and hundreds of miles away, insiders and outsiders, and at funerals, particularly of well-known elders, there will be up to 600 people in a community for 4 or 5 days. And often, this is when new romances start. So with death, new romances start because baptized young adults from all over Canada and the United States will come not because they knew the elder, but because they can meet each other and have plenty of time to spend together. So it's sometimes a celebration of life when they have the wakes because that's what may develop as a result of the death. And now we're moving to Hutterite romance. Now, this may not look like romance or fun to you, but for a Hutterite, this is a great time. And right now, the Hutterites are in harvest. And during this time, Hutterite elders will go all over Canada or the United States and look for eligible young men or eligible young women of good character and bring them, invite them to the colony to work during the harvest season. And it's considered an honor to be invited to another colony. And during the time that they're there, they'll be working up to 10 hours a day in groups together of young adults, meaning from about 16 to 24. And they'll be working together to bring in the harvest. And it's their time then when they can not only show how hard they work, they can evaluate future mates. Because since there's no divorce in a Hutterite colony, it's very important to have a good idea of the character of the person you're going to choose to marry. So when you see the young women dressed in their dresses working away, in this case, what they're doing is cutting seed potatoes. The young men will be bringing in the trucks and hauling out the seed potatoes, and that is a way where they get a chance to look at each other's sense of humor, to get a look at each other's character, how they get along with each other, and what kind of workers they are. So they really have a time to critically evaluate each other as future mates. And at the end of the harvest season, they have what they call a hachinka, which is a harvest celebration like our Thanksgiving. And it's a time when everybody comes to celebrate the bringing in the harvest. And the young people usually put together skits, and very much like things that happen here at Holden, there will be little things to commemorate the people who've worked in the harvest. In this case, some of the girls took nylon stockings and made little potato bodies of everybody that worked in the harvest. And they even made one of him, and I'll guarantee it was round. It had little round glasses and had a say. This is the head elder. So everybody gets a little sense of humor and something. And even, again, the Hutterites don't believe in pride. However, I had a little contest among the Hutterites because I was looking at children's art to look at whether or not you could tell if children had been abused or not. And I used Hutterite children as a control population since there's no divorce, no child sexual abuse, no physical abuse as we know it. And I had all kinds of measures to compare them with the populations of kids I was dealing with in the court system. And I had a contest, knowing Hutterites love contests. And so I had awards, which I made out of the women's dresses with little lace and added all this stuff. That was up there for a year when they won, even though they don't believe in that. I noticed that thing did not disappear for a long time. So here he is talking to and basically passing out honors in terms of just statements to the young men and women that have contributed during the harvest. And here are young women singing. And Hutterites don't use musical instruments, but they sing a cappella, and they sing beautifully in both German and English. And what you don't see is here's all the young women singing, and then over here are the young men looking at them. And they're watching them sing. And actually, if you know Hutterites, you can actually tell what colony they're from by their dress, because every Hutterite colony self-consciously makes their own decision about what pattern they're used. So you'll see vests on some girls, you see some have long sleeves. So if you know Hutterites, you can begin to tell who they are, even though most people couldn't, by the dots on their shawls or by their sleeves or what kind of how their outfits look. And here's Hutterite dating, a good example of Hutterite dating. Lots of people together having a snack, and I'll guarantee you the parents and the grandparents are out of this picture participating. There is no age separation or psychological separation between members of a colony. I have been at meetings where men were doing hundreds of thousands of dollars of business sitting in a circle with a baby in their lap scratching the head of a child at their feet. So children, because every Hutterite child is a full member of the colony except as a voting member, essentially they participate in every aspect of Hutterite life. And this was in Canada, and I was bringing two young girls. In fact, this young woman was here a few days ago, and her cousin to Canada to take another relative up there, and these were relatives of theirs. And you can see by the polka dots, again, that there's a variation in the shawl design. And here were two young men. they were all dressed up for Saturday night. Got their cowboy boots on, hats on, and they, I watched them go out on the lawn, set up their chairs, and I thought, ah, I know what they're looking for. But what happened is, since Hutterite babies and children think they can get love from anybody, before I could get out to get the picture, they were covered with children. They, you know, an open lap is an invitation. So here, what happened was Grandma had to come out and shoo all these kids away because this is what they were waiting for. That's Hutterite romance. I mean, for those of you who have been around for more than 30 or 40 years, this is not much different than we experienced it 30 or 40 years ago. And so social life is very important to them, and their life together and physical closeness is very important. And I'm going to close these slides with the beginning of life in terms of marriage. So all the rites of passage you've seen are death, you've seen birth, and now you're going to see marriage, which are the significant rites of passage in all human life. And again, showing you how in Hutterite society of any age you can participate if you behave. You see this little girl. She's participating too because she's meeting the teenagers. And actually, that's my son who came to, we're attending a Hutterite wedding. And this is the beginning of the festivities. And in Hutterites, because they only marry once, they don't get married in 2 hours. It goes on for days and days and sometimes weeks and weeks. But the formal wedding services will actually go on for 4 days at the groom's colony and usually for 4 days of party at the bride's colony before she brings all of her household goods and her family to the groom's colony where she will marry. And this is unfortunate, her head's cut off, is the young mother whose baby you saw in the very beginning with two of her little nieces. And here are Hutterite children waiting outside for the bridal couple. They're getting married in the church, and they don't get, it takes them 3 hours to get married. I always come to the end of the service myself because my knees aren't that good, and they are on hard floors a lot of the service. So, and you can again see with children how clean, how neat they are. Children age 2, I have seen sit at wedding services at the celebrations for 2 hours at a time without making a fuss. Compare that with the fact that most kindergarten and grade school teachers can't get kids to sit still for 6 minutes in a classroom. So what's the difference? Hutterite children know if they misbehave, they don't get to participate. So very early on, they're reinforced for their pro-social behavior by letting them participate only if they behave. And here are the teenagers waiting outside. There wasn't room in the church. And blue is the color for Hutterite weddings. And the bride has 4 wedding dresses, which she makes, as does she make her groom's shirts, which her new in-laws will send her the patterns for her new husband's shirts, which she will make for him before the wedding. And here's the new couple coming out of the church with his kinsmen behind him. And now everyone's parading back to look at the wedding gifts, which are all out, and they're always located in kinship. You can always tell, and they, you know, just like anybody at a wedding, they know who gave what to whom, and you know, who celebrated in what way, and they admire their wedding cakes. And again, Hutterites would tell you they're not competitive. I would suggest otherwise. Take a look at these cakes. I have been at weddings. This here in the front, you see a lock with a heart. There's open Bibles with statements on it. You've got tiered wedding cakes. I've seen a wedding cake that had a fountain in it that lit up. And had things coming out of. I also saw a wedding cake that was a computer because the couple were interested in computers, and it was a blue computer with a wedding announcement on the screen. And then there was a colony who couldn't bring the wedding cake, so they brought the cake mix and put it on the table. So Hutterites, again, you know, they enjoy themselves very much, and they love a good celebration. And here's the young couple in their new apartment, which will be on the lower level of the in-laws The man, birth to death, will be in the same colony or fission from the same colony, while all young women marry into another colony. So after they marry, her kinspeople, including her brothers and sisters, will usually stay around a colony for at least 2 weeks, not only to get to know their new kin, but to help her settle in, because she's going to be in a foreign colony. Even though it may seem similar to us, it will seem lonesome to her. So here they are parading in for the bridal feast. And at the bridal feast, this is the one time they will sit together as man and wife for the rest of their life as Hutterites, except at other weddings where they will sit as kinsfolk for the bride and groom. And again, to recognize the importance of women in Hutterite culture, men serve women during weddings and at funerals, whereas rest of the time, women serve the men. So it's recognition of the value of women. And some people would say, well, Hutterite culture or traditional cultures are patriarchal, and therefore women are oppressed. However, in Hutterite culture, the definition of a man is in relation to women. Because in Hutterite culture, you are not a man until you're married, and you're not eligible for responsible leadership positions. You can't be a head farm boss, you can't be a pig farm boss, you can't run the dairy operation, you certainly couldn't become the financial elder until you're married. So you don't have to marry, but essentially it's a woman who bestows upon man his status, which is very interesting, because in Hutterite culture, men pursue, but women choose. So Hutterite culture is very interdependent, you know, and though men may vote, I'll guarantee you they take their mother, their sisters, and their relatives' votes with them. And now this, I'm going to conclude with just pictures of recreation. They're out enjoying themselves after the wedding. And what they're watching is sports activities in the background. There's softball, and you can see they're enjoying themselves in the foreground. And here are some little girls getting ready to play baseball. And in the summertime, like everywhere, children are enjoying themselves and enjoying the sun. So I'd like to conclude the slides and just make a couple of comments, and I will be done. So could I have the lights, please? Okay, to conclude, in a contemporary era, which in most of American culture is characterized by family crisis, social unrest, economic instability, and political uncertainty, I would suggest that the Hutterites demonstrate that the nature of Americans as humane social beings might perhaps be measured not only by individual acts, financial achievements, or by material things, but also by people's willingness to modify their drives and desires to participate in developing socially constructed cultural kin groups of interdependent men and women whose goals and ends are cooperation and equality, growth and survival for young and old, strong and weak as one. Thank you.
That could be a definition for just a small family as well, like four or six members of a family.
Yes, but I would suggest to everyone that the wisdom, the traditional wisdom around the world is it takes a community to raise a child. And in fact, the Chinese have that saying, the Africans have that saying, and anthropologists would tell you it takes three generations of kin in the context of community to raise pro-social children successfully, because the child then is surrounded with a model for which there is no alternative. But if you have an individual nuclear family in one house and you have a nuclear family in another house, there may be great variation in what they perceive as right and wrong, and the child goes next door and is confused. Even in well-meaning families, we have so many varieties of what we call socialization in this country that it's very hard for children to know what standards are appropriate. So I think that this is one of the things that traditional societies offer us, is that if you have clear, consistent rules, you have a recipe that produces consistent results. And I think in our society today, the problem is many of us grew up with consistent rules. Most of the people probably in this room did. But however, most of the children that are growing up as products of families of divorce or disintegrate, what I call the disintegrative nuclear family model, which is now one and sometimes none, when we have a culture where even the parent, if they can't afford to be home, has to work, which leaves no one home that's a kin person with the child, that we really essentially have a deprivation model for child rearing in this country today. It's the lucky child who has an extended family system to help socialize them. Okay, questions?
Could you give an example of misconduct and punishment by an adult in the Hutterite community?
An adult? Excess drinking. Hutterites make their own wine, and they drink in moderation. They serve beer. But if an adult was drunken and disorderly, or wrecked a piece of farm machinery, or knowingly transgressed by essentially breaking a rule, stealing something, or taking money from the group coffers. I mean, those would all be things that would be morally incorrect or unacceptable. I'm trying to think what the varieties of things that human beings can do. They do them all too. They, you know, they're certainly not saints. So those would be things that what would happen to an adult that did that is essentially they would be stood up in church. They would have to stand and face their fellow community members and ask for forgiveness. And if they continued to transgress, then they would be asked to leave until they could reflect and ask for forgiveness. And they would be during that period they would be excommunicated, meaning they could not eat with their fellow men and women. And they would not be able to shake hands with them, which may seem like minor punishment, but to a Hutterite, that's worse than being put in jail, is isolation and being separated from the communal society.